This is KFSK News for Friday, April 11th. I'm Julie Hersey. Starting May 7th, every air traveler age 18 and older will need a real ID to board a flight within the United States. Alaska DMV manager Lauren Whiteside says her agency is ready to help any residents who still need to upgrade their ID.
We are ready and willing to issue to anyone and everyone who doesn't have one that wants one.
The Real ID deadline was delayed many times, but the Transportation Security Administration says this upcoming deadline is definite. Whiteside urges travelers who plan to fly on or after May 7th to ensure they have a Real ID. Without one, people may face delays or be denied entry at TSA security checkpoints, preventing them from boarding their flights. And military bases will require Real IDs for entry starting May 7th. Whiteside says the Department of Motor Vehicles has already issued real IDs to many Alaskans.
DMV has been issuing real IDs for over 6 years now. We started issuing them in January of 2019. We've issued a little over 350,000 unique real ID credentials since January of 2019.
Whiteside said the department has provided ample opportunities for Alaskans outside of Anchorage to get real IDs through mobile units and outreach programs.
DMV does have a mobile DMV unit that does travel to rural Alaska, and we have traveled to several communities over the last few years issuing real IDs.
If you are unsure if your driver's license is a real ID, check the top right-hand corner, and it will have a star symbol to indicate compliance. If you still need to obtain a real ID, visit your local DMV. And for more information, you can go online to dmv.alaska.gov. James Crippen is a Tlingit linguist who's trying to document the language before it becomes extinct. And he spoke with Colette Czarnecki last summer on why working with language is essential for him.
James Crippen, so I'm called Tseush in Tlingit and James Crippen in English. I'm a professor at McGill University in Montreal in Canada, professor of linguistics. So human language seems to be a unique phenomenon. There's no other animals that have a communication system like we do. Many animals know how, all sorts of ways to communicate, but they don't have the sorts of parts and pieces that can be put together in extremely complex ways to say completely new things. And so from a linguistic science perspective, we're trying to figure out what are those things in common and why are they in common? So we do look at lots and lots of different languages. We do intensive study and analysis of particular languages. And then a particularly crucial issue for linguists is that many, many languages around the world are critically endangered. They're disappearing. Obviously, Tlingit is one of them. It's in tough shape, and it's my heritage, so I'm doing research on it. I have been for the last 15, 20 years trying to study and document the language people can use to learn from. I think it evolved a particular way, and we're trying to see, like, how does it work that way? What are the parts and pieces that are going on inside of it? And crucially, this is the sort of thing you cannot do with books or recordings. I can't ask a recording of somebody who passed away, whether there's an alternate form that they didn't say, right? I can't get anything from those recordings that people don't do. And that's the questions that we're really interested in. What can't you do in your language? Because that defines the boundaries of your language. And that information can only come from living people.
How many fluent Tlingit speakers are there in the world?
The situation now is really, really dire. There's no easy way to put it. There's certainly less than 100 people alive who are fluent speakers of the language from birth. I would say, just a rough guess, there's probably only about 10 who are able and willing to work with linguists. And they're all in their 70s and 80s at this, I mean, except for maybe one or two who are in their 60s. So it's not fun to say, but the truth is within another decade, we're probably going to have no birth Tlingit speakers around for us to work with and document more language. The only places it's spoken are here in Southeast Alaska and in the Yukon.
And would you say the different regions, it's kind of like different dialects?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So there's more or less three major dialects of the language. The one everybody has heard in general, the one that everybody's learning nowadays, is the northern dialect. And that's spoken effectively from here north. There are two others. There's southern Tlingit, which is split into two. One is the Sanya. And then there was a third dialect, which was spoken in the Tongass area around Tantaquan, the going all the way down to the Canadian border. And this Tantaquan Tlingit, it's known as Tongass Tlingit, and it's really its own dialect. It has a whole bunch of things that are quite radically different from the other Tlingit dialects. It's still understandable, though. A Tongass speaker could speak to somebody in Juneau, and they'd basically be able to understand each other.
Would it be the sounds of how people pronounce that are different, and maybe also the grammar?
A lot of it is the sounds. There's some quite subtle differences between them that people would pick up on. Exactly how, like, the high tone versus low tone is produced is definitely a character that people would pay attention to. Some of the vowels shift a little bit. So, for example, in Wrangell, we might say something like, Atkhwat-e, I found something. In Juneau, everybody would say, Atkhwat-e, with a different vowel at the end. That's a striking contrast for a lot of speakers. But then there's also a few things like the names for times of the year, like months and so forth, might be a little different from place to place.
For people who want to learn, how can they learn?
Well, there's a huge amount of material that Rene Lance Twitchell has put on the web, and it is super accessible. There's YouTube videos that he's produced. There's learning materials, workbooks and stuff. I think that sort of stuff is just fantastic, and that's definitely the place that the average person should dive in. And then there's another thing is just all these recordings. One of the things that people can do if they've learned a little bit is to just listen to recordings. Even if you don't understand what's going on, your brain is picking up some of the patterns, some of the ways that the sound is coming out of these speakers. And if you're trying to learn, just by hearing that over and over, it will start to stick. Your brain will start to think, oh, yeah, there's this sound. And if I do this with my mouth, it comes out sounding pretty similar. And you won't consciously know that you're learning from this, but just listening to speakers talking is incredibly valuable.
That was McGill University's Tlingit linguist, Professor James Crippen, speaking on his 20-year devotion to studying the language. Sitka's oldest veterinary practice has closed its doors. Dr. Burgess Bauer retired on January 1st after 51 years serving Sitkans and their pets. Bauer is regarded as a brilliant diagnostician who didn't just treat animals, he helped their owners understand how illness developed and how to prevent it. And his practice from the very beginning was free. Robert Woolsey has this profile.
I've been taking my dogs to Burgess for 35 years. He knows I'm not a cat man, and he's relishing this tete-a-tete we're having in his pet-filled living room.
I'm sorry about the cat. For those out there in the radio audience, Rob is tactfully trying to push away a cat that's trying to rub up against his face, and now she's going for the throat.
Burgess, and I should mention that Bowder is universally known simply as Burgess, like Cher or Zendaya, Burgess is sitting in a recliner with one of his rescued greyhounds curled in a dog bed nearby. The greyhound doesn't even lift his head when I come in. He must sense that Burgess is winding up to reminisce about his five-decade-old decision to undergo years of advanced medical training in veterinary school at the University of Washington and then give it away for free. It began in childhood.
I had a cat, Susie Bell, and I wanted to get her spayed. And I can remember the conversation with my dad when, you know, she kept having kittens. I had her from the time I was like 5 years old until I was in college. I had her almost 20 years, and she kept having kittens the whole damn time. And I said, Dad, can we get her spayed? And he said, Burgess, we can't afford it. It was $20 back in the 50s. By the time you pay the rent, pay the this, pay the that, buy the food. My mom was a nurse. My dad was a truck driver. And I remember this. I said, well, when I'm a vet, I'm going to make it so people can afford it.
This is not Burgess's biography. That's already been written. It's called Animal Nature by John Straley, one of Alaska's most prolific novelists. I'll point you there for details about Burgess's early life, his career in collegiate football, and his life in veterinary medicine. Nor is this his obituary. We nearly had to write that in the mid-90s when Burgess lost a weight belt when diving for gooey ducks, became inverted, and more or less drowned in his diving helmet. His partner, Larry Traney, found him unconscious on the surface, resuscitated him, and a Coast Guard helicopter medevaced him to Juneau to recover in a hyperbaric chamber, which repressurizes divers who come to the surface too quickly. Burgess claims to hold the local medevac record 6 times, which I see no need to dispute. But I digress. Burgess now is a hale and hearty 80-year-old, suffering from a slew of cardiac-related complaints common in this demographic. What he misses most are his regular dog walks. As far as regrets, there are none, except those that haunt every medical professional in a life-and-death situation. Difficult surgeries without the support of a vet tech or anesthetist are at the top of the list.
Anesthesia is months of boredom, interspersed with moments of stark terror. And if you look at the statistic for veterinary medicine, it's close to human medicine in that this is the downside. You ask for all of the warm fuzzies, but the downside is, you know, having an outcome that's something less than optimal. And the worst of that metric is death on the table, and it happens.
I've produced 2 previous news stories about Burgess. The first was 22 years ago when he was treed by a brown bear on Sitka's newly built cross trail. The bear, it turned out, had killed his old yellow lab Signet and cached the carcass near the trail. The second was some years later when Burgess castrated a pair of nearly grown brown bear cubs at Sitka's Fortress of the Bear visitor attraction. Whether this was revenge and whether it was sweet or merely served cold, Burgess did not say. Burgess is a living repository of stories of Sitka and its people. When prompted for just one story, he doesn't hesitate.
Christmas Eve, and the phone rings about 10:30 at night, and hi, this is Mrs. Such and Such calling, and she said, my doggie's trying to have babies in the camp. And I said, okay. I said, is there anything coming out? No. Oh, she's laying down and she's straining. I said, go to the clinic. And I said, bring along some troops. So she arrives at the clinic and she's got 2 daughters, herself and her dog. And I look at this thing and it looks like the Hindenburg. I couldn't believe it. I cut to the chase and I said, we're going to do a C-section here. And so this poor doggy could barely move. And I'm hoping it's not going to die. And we roll it up on the table. And I delivered 13 C-section puppies. The biggest C-section I've ever done in my life. Every one lived. And I'm handing these things out as I'm pulling them out of this bitch. Can I use the word bitch on the radio? Good. All right. And I'm handing these out. And we got all these screaming puppies. That is the sound of angels singing. God. Oh. But this little lady, she has one of these little clasper wallets like that, you know, with a little thing where you click it like that and keep dollar bills stuffed in there and coinage. And she pulls this thing out, pops it open. She said, I don't have much, but I'd like to pay you for what you've done. And I said, it's Christmas Eve. It's yours. Take good care of them. And that was it. Oh, God, I love that story.
I can picture the grateful woman opening the coin purse. It evokes an era when coins were more dear than they seem now. The woman found good homes for all 13 puppies, and Burgess remembers not long ago putting one of the now elderly dogs down, a service he provided, like everything else, at no charge. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
For KFSK News, I'm Julie Hersey.